Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
In case you are keeping score at home or you need us to keep score for you, there is still a baseball game that started Monday night in progress. It's crazy, right? The Dodgers and the Giants are now into the ninth inning in the Bay Area. And they've used 37 guys already between the two of them. The game started right before we went on the air 3 hours ago. And because they've had so many substitutions and so many changes, and because there have been multiple lead changes, the game is still going on. Top of the ninth, Giants lead the Dodgers 8-6. You may have heard it with Brad Heller in his update there at the top of the hour. Of course, those of you who are listening on the podcast later on Tuesday will already know the results, but there is a good chance the Dodgers are about to lose their 11th game in a row on a game that started September 11th and is now still going to September 12th. Is it more painful when you literally have to play overnight? It's 2:05 in the morning in the Bay Area. The stands are empty. I mean, there are a couple of really hardy fans there, but for the most part, they're showing video, because I'm watching the game live in studio. They're showing video of fans sleeping in the stands. I mean, what's the point? Just go home. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio and the CBS Sports app. Again, for those of you who are using the podcast, well, you'll know the result before we do. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. On Twitter, at ALAW Radio, and then on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It's a Twitter Tuesday. It's also a Touchdown Tuesday. We will let you hear the candidates again this hour for Touchdown Tuesday, but if you already know which TDs we're talking about, well, then take the poll on our Twitter page, at After Hours CBS, or you can find my Twitter, too. I retweeted. I certainly do recognize there are candidates that are not in the poll. And if you have your feelings hurt over that, well, I think that's just how it goes in sports. Every week we'll have different candidates for Touchdown Tuesday, and I'm quite certain at some point your team and your favorite player will be included.
People have feelings.
What are your takeaways from opening weekend in the NFL? Even with one less game, so no Dolphins, no Buccaneers, there was still a lot to process. And as always, one of my big takeaways after opening weekend is pump da brakes. Pump da brakes. It's only week one. I mean, you can take your Super Bowl predictions to Vegas if you're that confident in them. I suspect that's not actually the case. You're not that confident in them. But it's week one, so you bring me Super Bowl predictions, and I snicker in your face. What are your reasonable takeaways from opening weekend in the NFL? We're inside the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Yes, Kobe Bryant laughs in your face, too. Two more games on Monday night. This tradition that the NFL has now, a doubleheader on the first Monday night of affair of the weekend. Total side note, I actually didn't mind the new Monday Night Football open with Hank Williams Jr. I have no idea who the other people were, but it was catchy. It was all right. It was a new spin, a fresh update on a theme that we've heard over and over and over again. So I didn't think it was that bad, but honestly, no idea who the new performers were. I only recognized Hank. So Monday Night Football split. No, we don't get 7:10 Eastern time starts every week. Sorry, Eastern Coast, East Coast, Eastern time zone football fans. But the Vikings got a national platform for what was an impressive game for them on both sides of the ball. We know about their defense. Mike Zimmer's defense's calling card for sure is being physical, flying to the ball, always attempting to take the ball away. Lots of pressure on the quarterback, another calling card for the Vikings defense. All kinds of pressure on Drew Brees and amping it up on third downs. So while early on you maybe had a stub of the toe here or there for the Sam Bradford led Vikings, they got into a rhythm pretty quick. Meanwhile, it was rough for Drew Brees and the Saints and Adrian Peterson against his former team until the very end. They had a quick touchdown drive late in the game, but otherwise it was settling for field goals and not being able to capitalize in the red zone. But man alive, once Sam Bradford got into a groove, he was fantastic. So think about all the changes for him over the last year. So calendar year, this time last year, he didn't even start the game for the Vikings because he had just gotten traded from the Eagles to Minnesota when Teddy Bridgewater went down. And he wasn't even ready to start the first game of the season. And by the time they put him out there, it was a pared down playbook as hard as he's working on it. You can't use the whole thing when your quarterback doesn't know it. And then they change offensive coordinators midway through the season. So in his year there at Minnesota, they go through two offensive coordinators and an O-line that's awful, god-awful. Now, this particular offensive line for the Vikings did not take a snap together as a unit in the preseason. So they probably have a learning curve too, but it's an offensive line that looked a heck of a lot better on opening weekend. And Sam Bradford, with a little extra time to throw, picked up right where he left off last year when he set a career best completion percentage with the Vikings.
Vikings in a hurry, first and 10. Bradford play action, feeling good about himself. Fires right, caught, touchdown Vikings! It's Stephon Diggs, and Minnesota takes a 9-6 lead. Dalvin Cook to the left of Sam Bradford on third and goal, takes the snap, looks right for Diggs. He goes up to get it, caught, and touchdown! On third down, Bradford back to pass. Fires left, Rudolph there. Caught at the goal line. Touchdown! Sam Bradford has thrown three touchdowns. And the Vikings lead 25-9.
Paul Allen with the dramatic calls. Brand new stadium, of course, that will host Super Bowl 52. And they were just getting warmed up. Bradford only missed on five of his passes all night. He ends up with 346 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. They got a fantastic debut from Dalvin Cook, so another one of the rookie running backs that goes for over 100 yards, like Leonard Fournette and Kareem Hunt of the Chiefs. Adam Thielen was amazing. Stephon Diggs got loose for a couple of touchdowns. And as I say, the Vikings defense was physical and brought a lot of pressure on Drew Brees and also stuffed Adrian Peterson. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Peterson against his former team got zero reaction. So he goes onto the field for the opening series for the Saints, and you would have thought he was, I don't know, Kareem Hunt, and nobody knew who he was. Not a peep from the crowd. Nothing different from the Vikings fans at all, even though Peterson obviously won an MVP with them and set rushing records and... It was crickets for sure inside U.S. Bank Stadium. It was, you know what it was like? When either a rookie baseball player hits his first home run and he goes back to the dugout and everybody ignores him, or when a pitcher is tossing a no-hitter and everybody in the dugout's afraid to talk to him. It was like that. Nobody inside the stadium wanted to acknowledge that Adrian Peterson was on the field. So anyway, he gets six carries, only gets 18 yards. Obviously, the Vikings were focusing on stuffing the run. But the drama with Peterson happened on the sidelines, and this was was one of my most amusing moments of Monday Night Football. I'll admit I was a little slap happy after the long stretch from Sunday into Monday. But Peterson is walking down the sideline behind Saints head coach Sean Payton, and he's talking to him. And the first time he says something to him, or at least the first time that you see him on camera say something to Sean Payton, Payton doesn't turn around. Now, maybe we've got lip readers on it out there, but to the best of my knowledge, nobody's really figured out what Adrian said to Coach Payton. But Payton finally turns around, says something back to Peterson, which we also don't see because it's the back of his head. And this turns into the biggest storyline coming out of this Monday Night Football game, which is crazy because nobody really knows what Adrian Peterson said, and yet everyone is attempting to become a psychoanalyst and a mind reader, and all of a sudden people want to drop in, it's not going well with Peterson in his first game, and he wants more carries, and he's in Sean Payton's face. I mean, ridiculous storyline and really ridiculous trying to stir the pot after 1 week of Peterson with the Saints.
I told you that it was nothing, you know, but it's not my first time being in a situation where the media or, you know, not everyone here, but people jump to conclusions and make their own assumptions when they didn't have no idea what was going on or what was said. You know, I could have said, I love you. And
it was, I love you.
You know? But it's no issue. We have bigger fish to fry. We need to, you know, clean things up on offense, sharpen up, tighten things up on defense. Special teams did a great job. You know, too many returns past the 30, you know, but, you know, other faces did a great job. And we just got to clean up a lot of stuff.
I mean, that's the case for sure for the offense. Their O-line still coming together for New Orleans, and Drew Brees was off point a little bit. And I mean, we saw that a lot from offenses this weekend. Turnovers, a little sloppiness, not quite in a rhythm. There were very few offenses that were immune to that. So the defenses looked fantastic this weekend in many cases, but it may not be the same way in week two or after the first month. So Peterson and Sean Payton do not have a beef. But it was the big excitement in Minnesota because there wasn't a whole lot happening on the field with Peterson's return. But there was this exchange that people can't figure out, so they got to make something up. That was Peterson post-game. And coming up, you have to hear what Tom Brady said about it. Normally, why would we care, right? It's some other quarterback who wasn't even there. But I actually was really impressed with Jim Gray at halftime of the Broncos-Chargers game, which we'll talk about too coming up because it was a epic fourth quarter for Denver. So at halftime, Jim Gray interviews Tom Brady, and you know it was live because he asked about Trevor Siemian, but he also brings up Adrian Peterson having this conversation, this exchange with Sean Payton. Again, we don't know what they were talking about, and Peterson's not going to tell us, and Payton certainly isn't going to tell us, and it probably doesn't matter anyway in his shape or form. But what do a lot of people point to about Tom Brady when they're looking for some reason to criticize Tom? And let's face it, there aren't a whole lot of things to criticize, but when they're looking for some reason to criticize him, what do they talk about? Oh, he yaps at his teammates on the sidelines. He barks at him. He gets in their faces. Which is true. I mean, he's really intense. And so Jim Gray brings that up in the context of Adrian Peterson and Sean Payton. And I appreciated Tom Brady's answers. I got to tell you, I listen to these interviews at halftime on Westwood One often just to kind of see if we're going to get anything from Brady. And he's a master, like Bill Belichick. He does it a little more pleasantly, but he's a master at answering a question and telling you absolutely nothing. So he had watched the first game, which was Vikings Saints, because next week the Patriots play the Saints in New Orleans. And Jim Gray asked him what he saw, and he spoke more about the Vikings than he did about the Saints. He just said, it's going to be a really tough game. They hate to lose. That's what he said about New Orleans, but he gave you an actual scouting report on the Vikings because that's not the team they play next week. But in this case, when he got asked about emotions on the sidelines, he did offer a legit answer. So I'll have you hear that coming up. Plus, what turned out to be an epic fourth quarter by the Denver Broncos. And yes, I'm being sarcastic. What are your takeaways from opening weekend now that it's in the books? It's our Twitter Tuesday morning and a touchdown Tuesday morning. So find us on Twitter at A-Law Radio and also on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
44-yard field goal try by Young Wei Koo. Holding will be Drew Kayser. Long snap from veteran Mike Wint. No wind to our right. The snap is down. Oh, the kick may have been blocked, and it was! The right-footed kick was blocked! It was blocked! Koo got the trajectory low. Denver's blocked the game-time field goal. It lands short. Line drives left. 1 second left.
That was the only thing that went the Broncos' way in the fourth quarter. Kevin Harlan with the call on the Westwood One Radio Network. He's fantastic as always. I listened to quarters 2, 3, and 4 with Kevin and Kurt Warner and then Ed Werders, a longtime friend, on the sidelines, and it was good to hear them. Also enjoyed hearing Beth Mowins do the first Monday Night Football game as a female play-by-play announcer. Not that it matters, because Beth is a longtime play-by-play announcer and is always really fantastic at whatever job she takes. She's been doing college football for a long time, but it was good to hear her on Monday Night Football. So the Broncos ice the kicker, this brand new kicker for the, I keep wanting to call him San Diego. In fact, both Harlan and Warner called them San Diego last night, so I'm not the only one. We'll stick with Chargers. So Vance Joseph, the new head coach for the Broncos, ices the kicker on what would have been a game-tying kick. He makes the first one as the timeout is called, and then the second one gets blocked. And as I say, everything else went wrong for the Broncos in this quarter. It was ridiculous. A 24-7 lead going into the fourth, but then this was the fourth quarter. Interception, fumble, missed field goal, three and out. And so the Chargers and Phillip Rivers took advantage and had that kick to tie. Couldn't do it there at the very end with 1 second to go. And the Broncos are able to hang on for a divisional win, but whew, in some ways had to feel like a loss in that locker room. Trevor Siemian looked okay at times, but like a lot of the offenses, the rhythm just wasn't there. So missing guys. I did have a stretch. I mean, he had three touchdowns. Did have a stretch where the Broncos offense looked better, but really very few offenses that were completely in sync in opening weekend. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, we'll get your Touchdown Tuesday candidates for you to choose from coming up in 10 minutes following our update. The poll is already live, so you can go to Twitter at A-Law Radio and then also send me your takeaways from opening weekend. So I mentioned this before we went to our break, and I want you to hear it. Because of the short, it was such a short exchange between Adrian Peterson and Sean Payton that is being overanalyzed a million ways to Sunday. I did actually think it was very intuitive of Jim Gray to ask Tom Brady about it at halftime of the second game. And he actually got Brady to answer about what happens so often on the sidelines when you see a player and a coach or two players having a heated exchange, though I'm not sure that Peterson and Payton qualifies as a heated exchange.
Look, it's such an emotional game. I mean, beyond what, you know, you could even see on TV, the way that it feels on the sideline, the intensity is so high. The emotions are so high. Anything that's said on the sideline to me is kind of just the way it goes. And I've been involved in my fair share of those over the years. You know, sometimes it's just venting, and that's just part of the nature of the sport.
So Jim Gray asking Tom Brady about confrontations on the sidelines during games. Again, I feel like it's overstating it to qualify Peterson and Payton as a confrontation when it looked like it was 5 or 6 words exchanged, and we have no idea what was said. Still, Brady is extremely intense on the sidelines, and very often the camera will catch him barking at his O-line or talking to a receiver. He's very expressionful. He's not one of those deadpan quarterbacks, right? He's not expressionless. I mean, he locks in extreme intensity. And so Jim Gray follows up with the idea that, hey, sometimes you have to talk these things over, talk them out. And he brings up this idea of these things hanging on and hanging over the heads of players and coaches.
You know, sometimes I'll go up and I felt like if I was in the wrong, I'll say it, and vice versa. I feel like if someone else was in the wrong, I'll say that. But I think it's important to be very clear with your communication. And, you know, when you're with people long enough in football, being a game is so intense and you spend so much time together, you do have great relationships with your coaches. So sometimes you say things that, you know, that are very heated, but, you know, we all understand that that's the sport we're playing. That's the way football is.
Great answers from Tom Brady. Just as insightful questions from Jim Gray on the Westwood One halftime show between Broncos and Chargers. Tom Brady was interviewed live, so I thought you might enjoy hearing that. And it's so true, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's a baseball team, hockey team, any kind of team where guys are together, guys or gals are together nonstop for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. I mean, there's no way that in a high pressure environment like the NFL stage or any pro sports stage that you don't have confrontations. What might be a monotone, run of the mill conversation in the locker room becomes extremely heated because of the emotions and the intensity on the sideline. And that, of course, is where the cameras pick it up. They very rarely mean anything. Every now and then I'll point one out, like Greg Hardy when he was on the sidelines with the Cowboys, that kind of stood out to me. And, you know, now and then you'll have guys shoving. But for the most part, it's just about the emotion boiling over. Now, if it's a long losing streak, sure, there's going to be frustrations. There might be pointing fingers. But all of that is in the context of one common goal and trying to pull together in the same direction. So most of that stuff doesn't matter when you get off the field, or if it does, it's worked out quickly. It's After Hours. Yeah. What? Was that you, Andrew?
Yeah, and which is amazing because Brad always complains.
Not really amazing.
Well, actually, let me explain to you why, if you don't mind. Brad Heller always complains to me that happened to him. I do it every morning, and it never happens to me.
Which is what? Why don't you tell the audience what we're talking about?
Which is taking his script off of my screen so I can read mine. That's for 5:30. And I've never understood how it keeps happening to him.
Meaning the sound fires automatically?
Yes. And then it just happened to me by touching a word on the screen, which doesn't make any sense.
Huh.
So I have to apologize to Brad for
thinking
that he was goofing.
How about you apologize to me? Because you just interrupted me in the middle of a sentence.
That's next.
Oh, okay, thanks.
But first, it's Brad, because I was, like, I'm not lying. Every time I hit delete and nothing happens, I go, how does Brad mess that up?
Oh.
And I was just about to think it again today, and it played. So I apologize to everyone involved.
Oh, sweet. Okay, apology accepted. Like, see, that's what happens. You know, intensity of the moment, high-pressure situation. Morning update, a Twitter Tuesday. Andrew Bogus just completely screwed up. We had to talk it out, but, you know, there was no camera in here going,
Shut up, coach.
Yeah, right. Seriously. I'm going to steal some of your thunder. The Dodgers and the Giants finally wrapped up. I mean, that game was barely starting when we were going on the air, and the Dodgers still have not been able to break their losing skid, so I'll let you give all the details. But, yeah, kind of fun to have live baseball all the way through the show. I wasn't sure if they were going to finish first or we were going to finish first, but that's kind of neat, although I guess not for the people who had to cover it. There was falling asleep in the stands, but there were still reporters and analysts and TV and radio people there the whole time.
Giants PR ordered pizza. I saw pictures of that, like 12 pizza pies to the press box. Good for them.
That's awesome. Is it breakfast pizza, though? That's the big question. At A-Law Radio for your Twitter Tuesday. We'll give you your Touchdown Tuesday candidates coming up. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown!
Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, head to @AfterHoursCBS on Twitter or give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Kansas City Chiefs.
From the 22, gets the snap, drops back, good time, looks left, looks right, winds up, long pass down the middle, hits an over-the-shoulder catch by the running back, out at the 40, down the middle of the 30, chase to the 20, breaks a tackle, 10, 5, touchdown! 78 yards! The rookie running back got a line drive pass down the middle and then was chased into the end zone. And the Chiefs have tied the game.
The Atlanta Falcons.
Two to the left, three to the right. Ryan empties the backfield. Somebody's left uncovered over there, and it's Gabriel. Now they get a guy over there across the top. Ryan's going to have some time. He can make a move in the pocket. Resets. Now going to sail it. Wide open. Hooper. 50-yard line. Austin Hooper, bare 40. Stiff arm at the 30. Keeps his feet. Hooper 10. 5. Touchdown, Atlanta. He shoved Quentin Dimps into Soldier Field.
The Philadelphia Eagles.
Quinn takes the snap again. He looks. He steps up. Still looking. He dashes to his left. He dashes to his right. He is starting to run. Now he fires downfield. Caught. Aguilar. 3 of 10. Touchdown, Eagles.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jags showing blitz again. Let's see if they bring the house again. Yes, they do. It's an all-out blitz. Savage drops it. He said the ball is out again. That ball is out. Dante Fowler picks it up. 45. 40. Dante to the 30. Dante Fowler to the 15. To the 10. To the 5. Touchdown. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Fowler has run it back. And the Jacksonville defense is running amok over the Houston offense.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Hey, that's first place Jacksonville Jaguars to you. Frank Frangie with the call of one of the fumbles by Tom Savage. Dante Fowler returns it for a touchdown, and the Jaguars in a rout. Their defense, to me, the best performance of opening weekend. Let's see, Merrill Reese with what was the touchdown that I felt like gave us a nice welcome back football on Sunday. Carson Wentz eludes the pressure from the Redskins and then steps out of the grasp of another defender before heaving a ball to Nelson Aguilar near the goal line, and Aguilar gets across for a touchdown. Merrill Reese with the call on the Eagles radio network. Matt Ryan to Austin Hooper, who wanted to hit somebody himself. This was one of the big touchdowns in the fourth quarter when the Falcons were trying to survive the Bears in Chicago. West Durham with the call for the NFC champs. And then finally, Kevin Harlan on the Westwood One radio network going back to Thursday night. Kareem Hunt, one of the fun redemption stories of the weekend, fumbles on his very first NFL carry, but has three touchdowns after that and a new record for yards from the line of scrimmage in a pro debut. That 78-yard touchdown gave the Chiefs the lead over the Patriots at Gillette Stadium. So which one deserves the time-honored title, the distinction of being winner on Touchdown Tuesday? I love you. That's what Adrian Peterson was saying to Sean Payton. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. You can find our Touchdown Tuesday poll on Twitter at ALAW Radio.
I love you.
I love you too. And then on our Facebook page, what are your takeaways from the opening weekend in the NFL? We did talk some Dodgers. We talked, because the game was going on most of our show. Talked a bunch about the Indians. If you did not hear our special Cleveland Indians nerd alert, well, make sure you check out the podcast, AfterHoursAmyLawrence.com, posted every weekday morning once the show is over. And you can look for the audio tab and get everything you need, including our interviews. To start the second hour of the show, we went to Denver Live to talk about Chargers and their return to LA and their defense, which was fantastic. Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram combined for 3 sacks and 6 quarterback hits in Denver. And it was Mike DiGiovanna who joined us from the LA Times. And he said, this is my first time covering the Chargers. It's kind of a different experience. 855-212-4227. Luis is in Oregon. Luis, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio. Luis.
Hello, Amy.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic.
This is my first time. I'm sorry. I'm, like, nervous.
Oh, don't be sorry, and don't be nervous. Go ahead.
First of all, before I even talk about the Raiders, I just want people to know in Florida and Houston that everybody in Oregon are thinking about them.
Mm.
I mean, we have our own little situation here with the forest fires, but
sure.
As soon as we get done with this, we're going to go over there and help out.
Aw.
It's, I don't know, everything that's going on in the world is crazy, but I was just wondering what you thought about the Raiders, and, you know, I know it's just only one game, I don't want to overreact, but...
I mean, join the party. Everybody's overreacting. That's what people do, so it's what sports
fans
do. Yes.
But, I mean, the defense looked good, and I feel like Marshawn Lynch kind of gave him a little more of a toughness that they didn't have before. I don't know.
Mm. Well, the offense wasn't extremely efficient. I mean, it was good to see Derek Carr back out there following the recovery from the broken leg, and he looked really excited. He said his adrenaline was just crazy flowing. You know, the thing that you talk about with Marshawn Lynch, I think that's so fantastic for them, is to be able to have a guy that you can hand the ball to late in the game when you need to keep possession, when you need to control the ball. And in this case, they wanted to keep it away from the Titans. And so Lynch, while the numbers may not show you that he had some fantastic game, he was their go-to when they needed to keep the ball in the fourth quarter. And I thought that was a big deal, something that they can use when they need him because of his toughness. As you say, he's extremely difficult to get the ball away from. He wants to truck people. And the defense, I thought the defense was fine. To be able to go into Tennessee and to limit what the Titans were able to do offensively, we'll get a better idea of how, you know, these defenses that played so well in the first week, we'll get a better idea once we start to see the offenses find their rhythm. But certainly this week we saw the defenses ahead of the offenses in most cases.
I mean, it was a better suite because Mariota, he's from Eugene. I live in Eugene.
Sure.
And he's like the nicest guy in the world, so I root for him. But
yeah.
I don't want him to be my team.
I certainly understand. Marcus Mariota is one of my favorite things about him is his brain, his approach to football, and how smart he is, and the fact that he's willing to learn whatever he needs to be a better quarterback. Now, the key with him is he's going to have to stay healthy. He's got to be able now going into his third season. If you're going to rely on him as the franchise QB, which of course the Titans want from him, he's got to stay healthy. Cause let's just say worst case scenario, this turns into an Andrew Luck situation. I mean, they can't afford that. Now in their case, they've got two great running backs in Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray. And that certainly gives Mariota a safety net, a blanket to kind of help. But he's got to stay healthy because they want to be able to rely on him now and in the future.
You're right. Yes. He's going to be great. I mean, he's a great person, great talent. Like, I saw him 4 years here, 3 years in Oregon. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate you listening in Eugene as well.
Okay. We love you over here.
Thanks, Luis. Appreciate it. 855-212-4227. That's always our number. And on Twitter at A-Law Radio, what are your takeaways on this Twitter Touchdown Tuesday? Touchdown Twitter Tuesday? Which one is it? Which one sounds better? Touchdown Twitter Tuesday. Touchdown Tuesday Twitter? Can we just get rid of the Twitter altogether?
Except
all right. It is one of the things that we do here. We ask you a particular question on a Tuesday morning. Summer's heat can cause your battery fluids to evaporate, so get your battery tested for free. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the battery you need. That's O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Also weighing in on Facebook, too, with some of your takeaways. I like this one from Scott. I think this comment could probably apply to any week in the NFL. This is why we love it so much. But he says, If week one is any indication of how the season is going to be, it's going to be a great football season. Uh-huh. I mean, what are they not? Even when you get the champ that maybe you predicted. So let's take last year and Super Bowl 51 and the New England Patriots. Yep, top seed in the AFC. Yep, Tom Brady. Yep, Bill Belichick. Yep, yep, yep. Except the Super Bowl was anything but typical. And the way that we wrapped up the season with overtime in Houston was the last thing in the world that anybody would have predicted. So even when the outcome is one that you can pat yourself on the back and say, yep, yep, I knew, the way that the NFL gets to that outcome, it's anything but typical. It's anything but normal or average or traditional, which is what I always love about it. And the more we talk about the actual games, the less we talk about the politics too, which is a plus in my book. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It's the morning of September 12th. I know a lot of you sent me tweets. I was tweeting a lot about the significance of Monday and the 16th anniversary of September 11th. Typically, I will spend time watching documentaries on the History Channel or Discovery Channel. Seems like every couple of years, they'll do a new documentary with a new perspective or new interviews. And there were a bunch of them for last year, the 15th anniversary. Because there were two football games, I didn't have a lot of time to sit and watch the documentaries. But I did spend a little time, and then I taped a couple of them so I could go back and watch. And even though I have friends who tell me they can't do it, you know, it's too hard for them, it's too emotional, and they don't really want to see it again or relive those moments on 9/11 over again, I make myself do it, not only because I don't want to lose touch with history, but because what do we say all the time, every year? Never forget. We'll never forget. And so I want to be sure that I never forget the details as well as the emotions and what it felt like to watch everything unfold in Lower Manhattan. When I was driving into New York City, because that's where our CBS Sports Radio headquarters are located, in fact, in Lower Manhattan, about 10 blocks north of the Freedom Tower, as I was driving in, I got to see the purple towers of light. And that scene always mesmerizes me. They stretch from Ground Zero in the footprints of the original Twin Towers up into the black night as far as you can see. As much as that date changed our nation's history, the course of our nation's history forever, it wasn't the end of the story. It didn't defeat us. And those purple towers of light are a great reminder that not only do we remember, but we move forward as a tribute. And so, yeah, I did a watch on September 11th to make sure that I remembered that day. As much as we've been talking about Harvey and as much as we've been talking about Irma and everything that's been going on naturally in our nation, it was good on Monday just to stop and take a couple minutes and pause. So I also appreciate all of your kind words about my blog. Thank you very much. Two shows in our book. We're back for Hump Show tomorrow night on After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.